Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, February 15th, 2014, and I'm Harley Schlanger, and I will be your host today. We have a lot to cover because the world is in a very precarious state. As Lyndon LaRouche has been emphasizing, we are really staring into the abyss. From the Russian standpoint, the potential coup in Ukraine, which would bring into power forces that are largely dominated by right-wing, anti-Russian, anti-Semitic, and in some cases actual Nazis, would bring NATO into Ukraine and put the Russian territory under several minutes alert before they could be hit by nuclear strike. That is, there's a first strike option that Obama and NATO is preparing that would be placed in Ukraine. Now, for the Russians, this is very much like a Cuban Missile Crisis. And this is largely the result of the collapse of the financial system, which we'll be discussing on the program today. But the real issue here is that in the absence of any competent leadership, in fact, Obama is a pathological narcissist who's willing to do whatever he's told by the British Empire, which is why we're in this crisis. The Congress voted 383-2 in support of the opposition, in support of Nazis, in support of regime change in Ukraine. And so in the absence of any leadership, with the exception of two patriots, one of whom is Walter Jones, who our listeners are familiar with, but in the absence of leadership, it's come to the LaRouche organization to provide the leadership to get rid of Obama and change the economic policies. Now, joining us on the program today are two of the people who are providing leadership. One is Keisha Rogers, who's a candidate for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate in Texas, with a vote coming up on March 4th. And Keisha has been very active. She's touring the state. She's intervening in events. She has the Democratic Party all tied up in knots. They don't know what to do. The more they attack her, the more her message gets out. So they're terrified. They don't know what to do. And also joining us will be Michael Steger, who just announced his campaign for the congressional seat currently held by the poor character known as Nancy Pelosi from San Francisco, California, the minority leader in the House. So we have Keisha and Michael with us today. Let me welcome both of you to the program.
Hi, Harley. Thank you.
Thanks, Harley.
Okay, you're there, Michael. Let me start with Michael, because you just sent out your announcement, I believe 2 days ago. What's the central theme? I mean, obviously we're talking about war versus economic development, but how are you going to bring this to the voters in California, and not just to voters, but actually these two campaigns represent a profound intervention on a national and international stage. So how are you seeing your campaign 2 days into it?
Well, I think that if people look at the reality of the situation, given the fact of what you just laid out at the beginning, we're facing the threat of thermonuclear war. Mr. LaRouche, whose forecasting record is unprecedented in the last 40 years, has never really made a forecast of this nature before, of this magnitude. We gave, within the early parts of February, about a 25-day period where we were looking at the immediate launching, or the very real threat of an immediate launch of thermonuclear war on this planet, which would threaten human existence. So in that context, you get a sense that the world is in a situation that really it's never been in before, and as many people have now come out and said, in terms of Russian leadership and others, that this is worse than the Cuban Missile Crisis. I think the point is that if you look at underlying that, what's beneath that then, you see an absolute devastation to the American population. In places like California, you have 40% plus of actual poverty. People of a family of four who can't pay bills, who can't pay electricity or water, let alone afford Affordable Care Act or other aspects of life, which are just considered basic. And the same thing is true even in San Francisco. So there is a level of devastation of the American population that is totally overlooked, with the psychological distractions of things like gay marriage and Justin Bieber and all the other media manipulations. So I think what Keisha and I represent, and what she kicked off her campaign with, which is really a John Kennedy approach towards the United States, and that since the death of John Kennedy, we have seen an absolute destruction, not only of the country, but a quality of strategic thinking that can address some of these problems. And that these campaigns, our campaigns, represent that kind of approach in a time when many Americans desperately need it.
Well, now, Keisha, you've been campaigning for a couple of months now, and you've seen the leadership vacuum, both from the Democrats and the Republicans. What's your sense? I mean, are the people who are you're talking to, who are coming to meetings, who are at the events you're addressing, do they have any clue of the depth of the strategic crisis?
No, they don't. And I think the issues that we're bringing in terms of that reality to the population and not being afraid to tell the truth and to actually make the point. I think the point is very clear, as Michael said, that we're going in with the authority of a 40-year track record of Lyndon LaRouche, who has never been wrong on his economic forecast, but also with the solutions that people are in dire need of. Because when you look at the situation where the entire breakdown of the physical economy, it's interesting, I had an interview with one of the local news stations here who was interviewing all of the candidates on their platform and what they think the biggest crisis is facing the nation and facing the state. And I said, a physical economic breakdown crisis, the loss of food, production, agriculture. And, you know, the guy asked me, what do you mean by physical economy? And I said, a productive economy. People forgot that under President Franklin Roosevelt and under President John F. Kennedy, we had an economy was based on real production, meaning that the physical standards of living come first, human life comes first, and not a profit of Wall Street. And that's what people want to hear. They want to have a sense of, as you just discussed, we are in the middle of a threat of thermonuclear war. We have a breakdown of a physical economy that has been egged on by a growing financial institution that's been pumped up by bailouts, bail-ins, and quantitative easing, and all types of speculative gambling activity, which is not a real economy. And what's the result of that? You have people starving in the streets. You have people without adequate water. You have people without adequate basic needs for living. And that's what the population and those who are really listening to what we're saying are responding to, is the fact that we've put a clear solution as to how to solve this. With Glass-Steagall first, shut down the Wall Street speculators, and go to a program for physical economy based on a real credit system. And when we put that solution out there, people respond with a sense of excitement and optimism.
Now, I want to put up front an event that's occurring today, this afternoon, as this broadcast is going out. There's an event that your campaign is sponsoring in Houston on the one-year anniversary of the meteor strike in Chelyabinsk, Russia. And I think this gets at part of what we have to discuss in terms of what you do to stop a war. It's not just enough to get rid of Obama. You actually need a policy to win the peace. So I'd like you to discuss that. And then what I'd like to continue from there, Michael, I'd like your thoughts on this, is what Lyndon LaRouche has been emphasizing in the idea that we have one campaign, really, from Texas to California that covers not only the western United States, but actually goes into Asia as well. So, Keisha, what's this conference that you're sponsoring today?
Yes. So this conference is the one-year anniversary of the meteor, that asteroid that hit over Chelyabinsk, Russia. And this is the meteor that knocked out several thousand windows. When it came toward the Earth, it hit and exploded prior to hitting the Earth in the area at a rate of about 30 times the TNT, the force of Hiroshima. And when people think about Hiroshima, think about the atomic the bomb that hit and destroyed most of all of that area within Japan. They think about that force that hit was greater than anything that people could imagine. But think about these gigantic meteors or asteroids hitting the planet. And the point is that there's so many out there that nobody knows how many they are. There are. What this conference is going to be taking up is not just the fact that we have these threats coming to the Earth, but the fact that you don't have a policy in terms of planetary defense that is geared toward addressing these concerns, addressing this existential threat to the planet. We're going to be having not only experts in the field of space science, space weather, also planetary defense, but the real question is that I am the only candidate or political figure across the entire nation, and for that matter across the planet, the only activity that's happening today that is addressing this issue. The fact that I've called for the full unleashing of NASA, the space program, when you've had a president who has said no to fusion economy, no to NASA, shut it down, bail out Wall Street. We don't have the means to actually address these scientific concerns.
And you've won two primaries with that same approach of
yes.
moving to impeach Obama, and complementary to that is developing NASA, expanding NASA.
Exactly, and that's why I felt that it was absolutely critical, given the importance of today and this event, to host a forum that will bring in scientific community as well as the lay population to give them a sense. This is what's on the line right now. You have a threat of thermonuclear war facing that is threatening the population right now. But what is the solution? What is the intention of this? This is to bring about a solution toward a peaceful orientation. How do you get out of this threat of war, this threat that is facing mankind? And I'll say, you know, as President Kennedy said, you know, we need in space instruments of, instead of weapons of mass destruction, we need instruments of peace and knowledge. And that's what this conference is going to be geared toward, a international collaboration around the leading nation states such as Russia, China, the United States, to actually take up the question of a peaceful solution toward the common aims of mankind.
Now, Michael, this has been, if you go back to the summer, there was a conference in San Francisco, the Schiller Institute, which you helped pull together, which took up the same theme from the standpoint of from the Mississippi River west through the Bering Strait across the Pacific into Asia. We have a mandate, a human mandate, to develop the physical economy in the United States in conjunction with China, Russia, and also countries like India, South Korea. So I assume this is going to be a central theme of your campaign, given that San Francisco as a city has historically been that kind of gateway.
Absolutely. If you take what Lynn has said, this recent, you know, even period of time, these last couple of years regarding this region west of the Mississippi, you are looking at Franklin Roosevelt's post-war vision of the world as it should have developed. And really, Texas and California didn't exist as advanced industrial and scientific states really until post-war period. During the war, there was a certain development of the manufacturing base, but as Harley, you're often noted to reference, you know, Texas wasn't very habitable until there was air conditioning.
So it's still barely habitable.
Right, yeah. So there's a certain sense of what these states have become. Now, they're the largest, most populated states in the country. They are some of the most advanced areas of scientific development because of NASA, because of the national labs, because of the university systems, because of the research facilities, because of the industry, because of a kind of a Western orientation outside of this Wall Street kind of influence until the Bushes moved in and the Greens moved into California. You had a Western state orientation of big development, big ideas. And John Kennedy, when he visited this area of the country, got a sense of that, got a sense of how dry, how arid the area was, but also knew, because of programs like the space program, because of the national labs like Lawrence Livermore, that there was great potential in this area. The Central Valley Project, what could exist in the Southern Valley of Texas, in the Rio Grande Basin, that there's great potential in this area, and that doesn't exist just in these two states. It really does exist within this entire region of the United States and North America. And that's really where the idea developed of Nuwapa, the great potential of this area, but just the absence of water. And so the Nuwapa Project took on a kind of a life of its own, developed by Parsons, and it's now existed and been on the table. And really, what LaRouche Pact has done with the Nuwapa program, advanced it to a nuclear and thermonuclear platform for the 21st century, of extensions into Western Oregon and California, nuclear power pumping stations have nearly doubled the potential water supply for the parts of the Southwest and Northern Mexico. This is a transformation on a grand continental scale of a massive land area, which really establishes what mankind should become in the 21st century. But then, as you've laid out, that natural course of action up into Canada, up into Alaska, the collection of water, the development of industry, the development of raw materials, leads to then the developments of logistical support lines and high-speed rail, a complete development of this water basin and water area throughout the western states, then easily lends itself into a Bering Strait connection into Russia and into Siberia and into Asia and all of Europe for a real commitment and collaboration amongst nations for development. And because this is the natural direction, this is what Columbus and Couza and the founding fathers and the people around Lincoln had envisioned the country would become, an extension westward to be a continental, but then a collaboration with the great nations of Asia, with Russia, and to really create a kind of dialogue internationally of the greatest nations and to uplift mankind globally. That's what this kind of project represents. The Nuwapa program implies that. And I think our campaigns typify a political commitment to that kind of orientation.
Well, now the governor of California suddenly last month discovered there's a drought emergency, but his steps toward it would be laughable except for what's happening. Now, I know, Keisha, you've been following very closely what's happening in Texas, but Michael, I'd like you to give our listeners a rundown of what this drought means in terms of California, which does represent one of the most important sources of green leafy vegetables, dairy, and beef in the country.
Well, let me just start, because I've been involved in this project now for 4 or 5 years around Nuwapa and its outreach and orientation. And in touring major agricultural areas of the state, even 4 or 5 years ago, and the drought's been taking place at least for 3 years, I would say even longer, but for the last 3 years, the water distribution has not been what it was supposed to be to farmers throughout the California region, especially the Central Valley. But over the last 2 to 3 decades, the agricultural production in the state of California has drastically changed. Just take the Imperial Valley as probably the best case in point. Most of what the Imperial Valley grows most of the year are cash crops for biofuels for an international market. So the actual productive capacity of the main nutrient sources for the population in the United States and this continent in places like the Central Valley are really diminished for a biofuel orientation, which is a genocidal policy.
And now, this is a change because within the last half decade, isn't it?
I think the trend has been going on longer, but I think the last 5 to 10 years, you've seen a drastic shift in this direction. But this has been the orientation. Now, the bigger problem is that because the whole process has not been managed effectively under a green agenda, the water system in California has destroyed major land areas because there's not enough water has been provided to keep the land area capable of making sure that ensuring a high-level agricultural yield. Land area has become salinated because the water process was not managed, because even back in the 1960s, The California Water Project was built in 1954 and finished. That state water project today is providing zero water to the farmers and the people of Central and Southern California. For the first time in its history in 50 years, it's providing 0% of water. But even at that time, it was already recognized there was not enough water, not enough water for the potential that could exist. And so what you're seeing is a kind of devastation now that was foreseen by people in California in the 1960s and 1950s. And what's happening is that there is massive well digging. They've already probably reduced the potential depth of water from 60 feet. Now they're digging 120 feet deep to get to the water table. Land and parts of the Central Valley are sinking by nearly a foot because of the intensification of water pumping in parts of the state. You've got a whole agricultural area which has been devastated now for decades. Places like Fresno and Bakersfield, kind of key areas in the Central Valley, and Sacramento are really gutted cities, much like you see in the areas of Ohio and western Pennsylvania, the old Steel Belt. So there is a huge increasing poverty. These are some of the poorest cities in the country. You have a huge immigrant population, mostly from Mexico and Central and South America, who are dependent upon an agricultural economy. Obama can come in here, as he did on Friday, and throw $100 million towards some of the farmers, but you are not addressing at all two major factors. One is the food supply. The second is you've got a lot of people dependent upon an agricultural economy that aren't going to see a dime of that money or anything significant.
Now, let me just bring Keisha in at this point, and let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Michael Steger, who just announced his candidacy to kick Nancy Pelosi out of the Congress. And Michael, do you have a website yet?
It'll be up in about a week.
Okay, so keep your eyes on that. I'm sure it'll be under Michael Steger, S-T-E-G-E-R, for Congress or something like that. Now, Keisha, you were listening to what Michael's saying. And, of course, in Texas, we don't have quite the same green orientation. What we just have is stupid conservatives who are waiting for God to make it rain. How do you deal with this?
That's very true. I mean, we do have a green orientation because you still have this people on the windmills and so forth with T. Boone Pickens here in West Texas. And I think that the main thing is that, one, we have to shut down this green environmentalist policy. I'm just going back to looking at the report that just came out that Michael was just referring to on the measly $100 million in the next 60 days to farmers in California. And then what does the top science advisor of Obama say? That is the cause of this drought and the major concern. He says that it is global climate has been so extensively impacted by the human-caused buildup of greenhouse gases and weather practically everywhere is being influenced by the climate change. And, you know, either it's climate change or it's, you know, that we have to pray for rain and do a rain dance. I was looking at a video last night, you know, where, and I remember in 2011 at the height of the drought crisis in Texas, and we were in the Texas state capitol, and you literally had state representatives saying, everybody in this room, in the state capitol, in the rotunda, gallery, bow your head because we are in a crisis and we have to say a prayer for rain because that's the only thing we can do. And, you know, I think that you pray all day, but the whole question is that if we don't actually shut down this agenda of the green environmentalist policy of population reduction and actually organize around the impact for a truly of the North American Water and Power Alliance to do what Kennedy had intended, then there's going to be no solution to this crisis. I mean, you look at the fact that in Texas, the reports are just showing, there was just a recent report that came out showing that 97 billion gallons of water used in the entirety from California to Texas for fracking. Over 40,000 wells were fracked across that area from California to Texas. Half of that 97 billion gallons of water was used for fracking in Texas. Over 18,000 wells were fracked. What does this mean? This means that you have whole cities. We're talking about close to 29 counties right now throughout the state of Texas, and particularly in western area of Texas, which is at risk of going completely dry. And there is no solution of sound solution whatsoever that is coming from the federal government or coming from the state governments, particularly on addressing this issue, when there is a very clear solution, and we've been organizing for that nonstop, I would say, for the past over 3 to 4 years now, which is the importance of implementing the North American Water and Power Alliance and actually taking this up from the standpoint that the green environmentalist policy, which is a population reduction policy, has to be destroyed. And I think that that's, you know, what you're seeing in Texas right now, what you're seeing in California, the fight has to be from that level.
Well, now, the same people who have imposed green policy and have done bailouts are today going for regime change in Ukraine. And there was a vote in the Congress on a non-binding resolution the other day with over 380 congressmen voting to support regime change, supporting the opposition, and only two who opposed it. Now, Keisha, this was something that you brought up at a editorial board meeting with the Dallas Morning News the other day, but I think it's, you know, most of our listeners know that the media is part of the problem, but I think that they might find it interesting to get a report from you on what happened when you brought it up, and they tried to pretend that there was nothing that was brought up and put on the table of any seriousness. So just give a quick report on what happened with this Dallas Morning News event.
Well, I mean, I think it goes to show that there's no truth whatsoever that's coming out of the media or response to reality. I was there with the other four candidates running for the Democratic Party nomination for the U.S. Senate here in Texas, and when they asked what is the most important thing, urgent issue facing the nation, the state, and I said a physical economic breakdown collapse driven by a drive toward thermonuclear war that's being pushed by the current policies coming out of the administration, including Ukraine and Syria, Russia, so forth. And, you know, I might as well have said nothing or mom's apple pie, I don't know, something. Whatever I said from that standpoint was not even, it was like I said nothing, and they said, okay, thank you very much, and they moved on to the next person. But the point being is that I continue to keep this very important focus on the table from the standpoint that there is a physical economic breakdown crisis. We are headed towards the brink of destruction of mankind through World War III, through thermonuclear war. And I think afterwards, the interesting thing is that the response that I got from a couple of the other candidates, one in particular, was, you said something in there, and I wanted to see, you didn't really get much time to speak on it, but I wanted to see, what were you discussing? What were you talking about? So the candidates were listening, but they were too afraid to go against the grain of popular opinion to really take this up.
Well, now this is, of course, you look at Pelosi, and Pelosi's been hand in hand with Obama on the Obamacare, on the bailouts. She's never protested the bailouts, as far as I know. But Michael, there was an interesting development announced yesterday, which is that Pelosi, for the first time, turned her back on a very significant Obama policy, which is the attempt to get a fast track agreement through the Congress for the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Free Trade Agreement, both of which would be like NAFTA on super steroids. Have you had a chance to think about what this might indicate? And, you know, is this, as LaRouche is saying, are we on the verge of getting a break against Obama if even Pelosi's not with him on this?
I think that's true. I think the potential break against Obama has never been greater, and I think that coincides with the desperation that the current faction behind him, this British and Dutch kind of Nazi tradition that's behind Obama, that's supporting the whole Nazi coup in Ukraine, that there is a real potential, as we know, in confronting some of the Jewish members of Congress, that what they just did in voting in support of the Euromaidan, you know, riots in Ukraine, that they're supporting not neo-Nazis. These aren't, you know, young kids with shaved heads who listen to bad music. These are literally Nazi organizations who identify with the Nazi sectors in the Ukraine that collaborated directly with Hitler's Nazi forces exterminating Jews, Poles, and Ukrainians. So I think there is a real potential for break. Many Democrats, it's not just on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which there is a huge revolt. I don't think there's much of the Democratic caucus that's supporting Obama's trade policy, and definitely not the fast track. It's Republicans and the insanity of the Republican Party supporting Obama on that program. You also have a revolt within the Congressional Black Caucus. Obama has appointed federal judges to states like Georgia who endorse, you know, versions of the Confederate flag over state capitals. And so there is a public outrage now from the Congressional Black Caucus. And, of course, it's Valerie Jarrett, Obama's British controller and handler, or British appointed, who's been having to address the actual revolt within the Democratic Party against this administration. So I think it's time that we get some Democrats to grow some courage and some guts and to work with people like Walter Jones and the Republican Party and break this partisan divide and call for Obama's impeachment. And we know that we can mobilize this country around something like that and really change the course of what takes place in history now.
Well, and this also, look, we've been, since April 2009, been pointing out, well, Lyndon LaRouche at that point pointed out that Obama is a narcissist. He has no empathy for the population. And at that point, he said he's continuing the Bush policies. I think that's become clear. Increasingly clear. And yet, of course, he's still in there. Now, Lynn talked the other day about needing a Nixon moment. And I take that to mean the same way that Nixon was under enormous attack by Democrats, but he didn't resign until Republicans went to him in the form of Senator Howard Baker of Tennessee and basically told him if he didn't leave, he was going to end up in prison. Now, if we're looking for a Nixon moment, that I think would mean we've got to get some Democrats to do that. And I'd like both of your thoughts on this because, you know, the Democratic Party has been cowardly. The Black Caucus represent African Americans who have been hardest hit by these last 5 years of depression. The liberal Democrats are angry about drones, about spying, about the Obama war policy, Obama refusing to keep his promise and shut down Gitmo, and yet there's a silence. So what are you going to be doing with your campaign in the last few weeks, Keisha, and then Michael with your campaign, to break the silence? Is there something you can say about the situation in terms of the Democratic Party? Why don't we start with you,
yeah.
Keisha?
Sure. I think the most important thing is to take up what Lyndon LaRouche has really been challenging the population with, and members of Congress and any real citizen of this republic, is understanding what our constitutional republic means and what human beings, we as human beings, must respond to in terms of our commitment to the future generations and recognizing that this isn't just a political issue. This isn't about your job or your position or trying to be popular. This is about the lives and deaths of the population, that you, those who refuse to respond to this reality, are guilty of not just going along with a so-called popular opinion, but guilty of the results which may result in the death of millions of people on this planet. Now, how do we respond to that? We give people a sense that, what does it mean to be human? What is the meaning of your life? What are you doing? What are you responding to? And when you hear Democrats who are, their response to doing something about a treasonous president who's acting on behalf of the British Empire, who is carrying out a continuous policy probably 10 times worse than that of Bush, George Bush and Dick Cheney, the only thing that they can say is, well, I know Obama's bad, but the Republicans are worse, and we get that all the time in the field. Well, you know, we let Bush get away with it, or whatever insanity that people bring up as to why they're not going to act. That cannot be accepted. The Democratic Party, particularly those who respond to this commitment of, as I've laid out and as Michael and our entire policy committee has laid out, of restoring a JFK, Franklin Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy, Franklin Roosevelt legacy in the Democratic Party, has to break with this popular opinion and has to actually say that we are going to remove this president now. We need some courageous leaders, people in the Democratic Party who are going to respond to this call to action. And I know there are some out there who can actually respond to the task. And that's going to be my continued role, is going up and down across the state of Texas and also encouraging and influencing other people throughout the entire country with our activity and commitment to give people a responsibility that if they expect to lead, they have to actually act now and do what we're calling on them to do and what the population is demanding that they do, which is to remove this president now.
Well, I think it should be noted, as we're talking about the problems with Democrats, that the Republicans in Texas, which is the majority party, have not exactly demonstrated any courage, because several of them have talked about impeachment, but none of them are doing anything. Now, Michael, you've got a state which is largely Democratic. What are we going to get from there? Is there any motion that you see in that direction, or are we just going to have to use your campaign to do a lot of kicking?
Well, I think the latter is going to be true regardless. There's a lot to get done. But I think fundamentally, just take the green issue, in California especially. And Obama, as was mentioned earlier on this discussion, you know, he's going to go there. And this is what people have been trying to say, is, you know, climate change has caused the problems of drought in California. And the problem anyone's going to have is proving to people how reducing our carbon dioxide emissions are going to somehow bring more water to the state and not kill millions of people in California and across the country. But I think the thing that comes up, and I think this is why Lynn's role is so unique, is that there is a scientific tradition to California, to Texas, and to the United States, but largely concentrated in these states, which reflect a quality of American outlook towards problems that is how you also address why Obama should be thrown out and the kind of quality of thinking that makes that necessary and apparent to any decent patriot, regardless of party. I mean, just within climate science, just to take as a pedagogical example, they don't even regard the activity of the sun in our climate on Earth, in their climate models. They largely disregard the power and effects of these larger, longer cycles of the sun, or, as Mr. LaRouche has pointed out, the longevity of the sun itself, as if the sun is perhaps getting much weaker as it gets older, and we're now seeing greater disruptions. Another factor, just beyond our solar system, is where are we in our galaxy? Because there are motions within the galaxy, which is not an homogeneous blob. It's not some, you know, bad 1950s horror film. The galaxy is incredibly structured. It's dynamic. It's developing. It's not static. And so there's a process of change of our solar system moving within that galaxy and the development of the galaxy itself, which could have a very clear impact on questions of radiation and other characteristics that are not yet even studied, that have an effect upon our climate and the development of our planet. And these are the questions that we should be asking. This is how we should employ the next generation of young people in these states and across the country in asking these questions. And if any American has any commitment to that kind of idea, that that's what this country should have become over the last 50 years, and that's what we have to dedicate to today, then Obama's removal should be an obvious step to avoid the goddamn destruction that's taking place under this president. And it really is goddamning in what we're facing today. So,
well, let's get back. We have a little bit under 20 minutes. I want to get back to the Ukraine situation because this is the leading edge toward war, and as Lyndon LaRouche has emphasized, it could happen in the next couple of weeks. And the driver for this is the combined effects of the deployment of the anti-ballistic missile defense system, which now was started this week with the deployment of an Aegis carrier to a port in Spain, the continued intent to put in ABM systems, anti-ballistic missile systems, in Poland and, I believe, Romania, and then the support, not just the support for a Nazi opposition in Ukraine, but as we saw with Victoria Nuland's statement, and as Helga Zepp-LaRouche said, that everyone focused on the part of her own sexual perversion where she says, fuck the EU. But the more important point was that she was talking with the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine about who should be in the government. That is, a regime change policy dictated by the United States. So here we have this situation which is moving toward war. Now, Keisha, we've got to really escalate the breakthrough for the population into reality so they understand that. And I just like to get a sense of what you're doing in your public appearances to get across to people, as you did in Dallas with the Dallas Morning News, to get across to them, this is their life. This is not some scenario.
Well, I mean, I think that the most important thing, I'll just give you an example, is going out to these meetings and not addressing what they think is popular concern or issue on the table, but changing the subject to put the reality on the table of what is actually threatening this nation at the present moment. Starting first and foremost, I'll give you an example. I went to speak at a Tea Party meeting in Tarrant County, and this is my first time attending this meeting, but this was in the midst of Lyndon LaRouche's warnings of a 26-day countdown to thermonuclear war. And in a very brief period of time, gave people a sense. Lyndon LaRouche, who's never been wrong on any of his economic forecasts, who I've been working with for 10 years now, over 10 years, has now warned something that he's never warned before, which is the fact that with what just happened with Victoria Nuland and John Kerry and others going over to push regime change in Ukraine to support Nazi opposition, this is what is leading us to the brink of thermonuclear war. And going into these meetings with maps of the region, those people don't even know Ukraine from whatever. And so giving them a sense, why is this area here being targeted as a trigger point for launching thermonuclear war with Russia, China, and could wipe out the entire planet in less than an hour and a half? Why are you not discussing this? Why is this not being taken up as the ultimate fight right now in kicking your Congress in the rear and saying, why is it that everyone in the Congress except for two people voted in favor of supporting Nazi opposition in Nazi demonstrators in Ukraine and are saying that Ukraine does not have the right to its own national sovereignty except for two people who voted no, who expressed patriotic leadership. But I think the most important thing is giving people a sense of the power that we have as citizens in the population to demand this president be impeached and to actually recognize that there are solutions ready to be put in place. And that's what we've been, I've been emphasizing and going to these meetings, and I will continue to emphasize that business as usual politics in terms of, you know, the single issue discussions that people think are relevant have to be taken off the table, because the question is, will people respond to the life and death situation? Remember what, reminding people what happened when the president tried to ignite the threat of thermonuclear war by going, by the attempt to go to war with Syria over the so-called red line and chemical weapons. And the American people, they called their Congress members in record numbers. They were at town hall meetings. They actually put a stop to this. The problem is we didn't go all the way. We didn't finish the job by calling for the impeachment of this president. And now making that point that now is the time to do that. Now is the time for the population to be kicked into massive action right now to actually put some serious pressure on the on the Congress members and ask them, why are you selling out the population? Why are you being prostitutes to the British Empire and Wall Street by going along with this policy and saying, you know, the fact that there's only two members of Congress, you know, besides a couple of, I don't know, a couple of members voted, didn't vote at all, but two members of Congress who voted no against this murderous policy. So I think the most important thing is educating the population, giving them a sense of what's going on, and really giving them a sense of the solutions to get out of this crisis, which are indicative of the importance of what Michael and I are doing with our campaigns and also what we're doing with this commitment toward the vision for collaboration amongst nations.
Well, also, I think the important point, you brought up the Syria example. We did put out a fire then, but the pyromaniac remained in office. And one of these fires is going to explode into thermonuclear war if he's not removed. Now, Michael,
right,
when you take this question up on Ukraine, you have all different kinds of ethnic groups in San Francisco. You've got Chinese, you've got Russians. I'm just wondering if we've done any outreach at this point yet to some of these communities that are affected by this idea, on the one hand, of the potential for Eurasian development, and on the other hand, the threat from the British Empire to punish those countries if they don't go along with the collapsing system.
Yeah, I think that's the right perspective to take. Is, you know, you really do have, as it was stated in a 1950s book, but with now a much different context, you have a conflict between two cultures. We have done some outreach. We hit the Ukrainian embassy a couple of days ago and had a discussion there with one of the members of the diplomatic deployment there at the consulate with a full briefing. But it's clear that the magnitude, except by the high-ranking officials that we saw from this group in Russia, including Sergei Glazyev, who's been heading up this trade bloc within Eastern Europe in Russia, as well as Ivashov, the foreign head of foreign relations for the defense ministry in Russia. They've come out and warned very clearly of a threat of world war, and that, in all honesty, we're not about to enter into a war conflict. We are in one currently. That the propaganda and information and psychological warfare already involved. as we see around the coverage of the Olympics and of the statements and lies towards Syria, the statements and lies towards Ukraine, is already a war orientation by the United States and really by a British Empire, British Dutch Empire program, the EU, the West, the NATO, and so on. There is definitely, I think the question of the two cultures, though, is most critical. And I think that people have to remember that had it not been for Lyndon LaRouche and his wife's and our organization's interventions in this post-Soviet era, then the kind of population growth you now see in Russia for the first time since the fall of the Soviet Union, and the kind of level of advanced industry you now see developing in China around its infrastructure, around nuclear power, thermonuclear fusion research, its space program, these things were not the orientation of China in the 1990s. At that time, they oriented towards the cheap labor supply, which created the billionaire communists. Now they've got an orientation which is much more oriented towards real progress for their population. Now, there's many imperfections in all these nations of Asia, but there is a commitment towards progress. And that, I think, gives clear indication of why it's so important that we develop the western parts of the United States and orient towards these areas across the Pacific. With Russia, Russia's looking for eastward development into Siberia towards Vladivostok. You've got the developments in South Korea and China on fusion research. Japan still has significant nuclear and industrial capacity. There are places in Southeast Asia and in India who are looking for the collaboration and leadership of a Promethean United States. And that really is the question. And that's the greatest risk to this empire system, is that that Promethean legacy of the United States will roar again, will raise its head and fight on that principle again. And I think that's why you see such panic towards this very existential threat of conflict.
Now, Keisha, how do you, I know you and Michael have had some preliminary discussions, but how do you intend to, in a sense, coordinate the campaign so it's one campaign? And I'll just say that the importance from the beginning for your campaign was that the issue is not election campaigns per se, but the whole 2014 midterm election process, to transform it from the usual drivel and social hot-button issues into a real deliberation on the future of the United States. So how are you and Michael going to work together to accomplish that?
Well, I think that, first of all, our collaboration with Mr. LaRouche is crucial. He has put out, Mr. LaRouche, and with our discussions, Michael and I had a discussion briefly with him on the other day, what has to be the essential focus on an orientation toward uniting these two states around taking up this higher question of collaboration in the commitment to a fusion economy, the North American Water and Power Alliance. One of the things we're going to be doing is a continued series of educationals. We are going to be, Michael and I, participating in a live webcast or broadcast soon here. And the intention of that is to give the population a sense of what the solutions are to getting out of this crisis, that you have the two most productive states in the union, or what have been the most productive states in the union, California being probably 50% of the agriculture in terms of the fruit and food production for the entire nation. You have your production in Texas, which is essential for your cattle, rice farming, ranching. And the essence of what we have been fighting for around the advancements of the nuclear NWAPA 21, the commitment, the gateway to the physical economy, a fusion economy, based on the most advanced scientific development, that has to be put at the forefront of the agenda. And I think that what Michael and I are going to continue to do is to educate the population on, and members of Congress and others, on the importance of this commitment toward a breakthrough in all fields of scientific development that are going to address this urgent concern of how we're going to make sure that we don't have millions of people west of the Mississippi that are going to be struck, continue to be struck by lack of water, and not only lack of water and drought, but the threat of mass starvation by, one, making clear that we have to shut down this environmentalist agenda and actually organize around the development of what Kennedy had envisioned for the nation toward commitment in the most advanced agricultural, scientific, and industrial development.
Keisha, just your election is in just a little more than 2 weeks. What can people listening to this call do to help? If they live in Texas, obviously they can be going door to door, they can be getting out literature. But what should people do to help the campaign in this last couple of weeks?
Well, I'd say, you know, do everything you can. Call into our office. You can call the office at 713-930-8052. Contribute to the campaign. And also tell your friends and family that they should vote for me. Vote in the Democratic Party primary and make sure that we can organize these solutions to be at the forefront of our political discussion and get them moving and acted upon immediately, because we need them. We direly need them in this nation right now.
And, Michael, what are you planning for the real kickoff of the campaign? Do you have some events coming up, some activities? How can people get involved with the campaign, and is there a number they can call?
No, we're getting all of that worked out here in the next couple of days. I think the big question, and what you raised with Keisha and I in terms of our collaboration, and people should have a sense, Keisha and I didn't decide to get involved in politics because of Obama or because of what we saw, you know, the current crisis we confront today. What Keisha and I both recognized not over a decade ago, when we were both young adults kind of coming out of college and wondering how is a society going to function given its current condition, we both recognized what Mr. LaRusha put forward, that what was necessary if mankind was going to survive was a complete transformation in how mankind was operating, how it was organized as a society and as an economic system. And that Keisha and I both share in that kind of commitment, which is really a commitment towards mankind's creativity. Because the only way we're going to get to that next higher system of mankind, this post-Obama, post-non-war period, where NWAPA and space exploration exist, is a commitment to that kind of creativity, which is not disassociated with a sense of real passion for mankind's development. Because there's no ideology or mathematical structure that's going to generate this next era for mankind. And I think our campaigns share in that commitment more than anything, because Keisha and I share in that as individuals.
Well, I think the important thing for both of you is that the time is short, and I'm not talking about the time before the election. I'm talking about the time for humanity. And both of you are very articulate and passionate spokesmen for the future. But to get to the future, we have to make sure that we're not going to go up in flames in the next couple of weeks. So I think what we need to do is we'll post on the various LaRouche PAC sites or wherever we can, once you get your website set up, Michael, and Keisha, give the number again where people can get in touch with you.
That number is 713-830-9052.
And both of these campaigns need funds, and you can call the numbers to contribute, but most importantly, go talk about this. Tell people about the support for Nazis. Obama not only is supporting Al-Qaeda terrorists and backing up the Saudis who fund them, but now he's supporting Nazis. And we can't tolerate that as a nation. So talk about this. Get your friends to listen to this interview so they can see that there are still potential leaders in the United States who are not cowards and who have not capitulated to Wall Street. So Keisha and Michael, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And that will do it for this week's edition of The LaRue Show. Join us next Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and take your future into your own hands and do something. Thanks, and we'll talk to you next week.